I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting. It is March 8th, 2022, and we are meeting via video teleconference call. I'll call the roll. Ann Price.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
Sean Carlton.
Here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
For the record, all directors are present. Thank you. Item 3, the minutes of the February 8th, 2022 business meeting. Any corrections or comments?
Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the February 8th, 2022 business meeting minutes.
I second that motion.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes for February 8th, 2022. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Tom, was that an aye? You're the only one I can't see.
Yes.
Thank you. Meeting minutes are approved unanimously. Item 4, financial reports. Accounts payable for February 15th and February 28th. Any questions on the accounts payable?
I do.
Yes, Tom, please go ahead.
On February 15th, for Card Services Center, we had a notation for CEU book. What's that?
CEU stands for Continuing Education Unit. The guys, when they redo their certifications every year, they have to have continuing education credits before they can renew. So they are always learning.
On the 28th, we have a $12,000 output for Trojan Technologies and UV bulbs. Didn't we just change those? How often do we have to change those normally? Just a couple of months ago,
We did. There is, 30 bulbs in each bank, and we have two different banks. We changed out one bank in September, and now we are due to change out this bank. The last time we changed out this bank was June of 2020, so they've lasted that long.
Wow, so they usually last about 9 months or so then, at a whack, or 10 months.
They are guaranteed for 10,000 hours. If they go beyond that, then good for us.
Do we run those 24/7 or is there a timetable they run?
That's a John question.
Yeah. My understanding is they run when we are sending effluent to our diffuser, our outflow in the Nestucca River. So I do not believe we do that continually, but when the plant says it's time, the UV bulbs fire up and they provide our needed disinfection.
A lot of bulbs, like you say, you fire them up. It takes a lot out of them to turn them on. Fluorescent lights are a good example. And I was wondering if it would, just off the top of my head, starting these UV bulbs up, is it harder on them to start up or to leave them on continuously? And is it, I don't know.
We have a warranty on the bulbs, I believe, for 10,000 hours. If we run them continually, we'll burn up that warranty with no disinfection credit. And since these are low pressure UV lamps, the startup should not be overly hard on them, nor the shutdown.
Okay, thanks. That's all I have, Charlie.
Stay on time.
Are those recyclable bulbs or anything like that, or are they just, that's it,
Well, when they're burned out, our current practice is to dispose of them. I'm currently working with Trojan because I know from my previous job, which was until recently the largest drinking water treatment plant in the world that utilized UV disinfection as its primary treatment process. These bulbs, they're expensive, and we want to use them wisely. And I think that, I don't know if I answered your question, Cameron, but
they're a recyclable bulb.
Oh yeah, well, there is a recycling program through Trojan that we are not taking advantage of, and I am working with Trojan so that we can send our spent lamps, our used lamps, back to Trojan, and as opposed to throwing them away. They do contain mercury. So we're working to be able to send them back to Trojan. We'll have to wait until we get a worthwhile amount of used lamps to send them back. But my understanding is that they dispose of them in an environmentally sustainable way, and we want to take advantage of that. So we're moving in that direction.
Okay, good. Well, you don't want the mercury going to the
ground. Absolutely.
Thank you, John.
You bet.
Any other questions on the panels? Hearing no questions, I'll entertain a motion. And your mic's not on. Sorry, there we go. I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for February 15th and February 28th of 2022.
I second that motion.
I'll second that.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payables for February 15th and February 28th of 2022. All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Motion passes unanimously. Are there any questions on the fiscal year report 2021-22? Hearing no questions, we'll move forward. Item number 5, the manager's report. John?
Thank you, Carolyn. Just to kind of highlight a couple of, key topics from the manager's report. I didn't want to touch on COVID-19. The good news is all indications are COVID-19 is sure seems to be ramping down. We've got a state-required indoor mask mandate that, based on my understanding, is going to be lifted pretty soon based off of not only the state statistics, but the national statistics. We had some positive COVID tests from our staff in February, by far the most we've had. And as disappointed as I am about it, I want to let everybody know that thankfully everybody had a relatively mild case. And I'm disappointed that we were, at least on the surface, it appears as though we were so close to the finish line and we just couldn't quite get over the finish line before it caught us. We had four employees test positive for COVID during the month of February, which was very disheartening and disappointing to me, and I know the rest of the staff. But I will say that despite that, our continuity of operations was never threatened, and as I alluded to in my manager's report, the crisis passed very quickly. For those of you who may or may not know, the CDC recently scaled back their quarantine periods and their isolation periods. I think it's because that they've determined that they've got a good handle on how long somebody is contagious with this virus, as well as how long somebody needs to quarantine in case of contact, just due to the knowledge that collectively we've gained about this virus over, you know, about its how long it takes to incubate and things of that nature. I will say that helped us greatly. I will say that we are continuing for a period of time to implement our mandatory COVID employee screening program. Everybody is tested negative at this point, and we are completely out of the woods, and I think we were very lucky. And I, you know, happy to entertain any questions or comments. I will say this largely impacted the unvaccinated staff, but the combination of the pandemic appearing to wane, and the fact that hopefully we're stronger and smarter, just with natural immunities and other things, I think we're coming out of this stronger and smarter. But I'm still disappointed to report the troubles that we did have during the month of February. This happened kind of at the peak, or as the peak started to decline slightly in our county for the Omicron variant. And, you know, it's a, thankfully, well, it's a highly contagious variant based on my understanding, but thankfully it's also a relatively minor variant in terms of, you know, at least nationally, how it has impacted people. It's news I wish I didn't have to report, but good or bad, the board needs to know, and we had a rough month in February, but everybody's okay. Everybody has been testing negative for a couple of weeks now, and I think we're in good shape. We weathered the storm, and it's behind us, and it was over as quickly as it came. And I just want to let you guys know that feel responsible to a large degree for it. I mean, I had a COVID continuity of operations plan, and we had procedures in place, but it does appear as though that there was some transmission in the workplace, at least between two individuals. And I need to let you guys know that. So that's item number one. Sure. Carolyn, if that's okay, absolutely.
Sure, go ahead, Cameron.
So now this is kind of a warm-up for what are we going to be installed for the next 20 years, that if it's not COVID, it's going to be something else. You feel pretty confident that what we have in place, that we'll just move it around for whatever comes next. The ones that, so it was the ones that did get the shot, was it the severity, I mean, or all four of them really sick, or did it just show minimal?
Cameron, I think we need to be very careful discussing the health of our employees.
Where I'm wondering, though, is the severity. Everybody else has a different tolerance, I'm going to say, to flus and stuff like that. Basically, it sounds like we're just going to have another flu season, and it's just going to be another different strain. So what we have going on, what we have in place now, will hopefully work for our next roundup of whatever it is to be. I mean, we've got the building, redone it, and filtration systems. put in place. I mean, that was for the office part of it, but then, you know, you got the people working in the trucks together, you know, and that's, and in the ditch or wherever, you know.
Yeah, your question is?
It's just that we're in plan, that everything is in place now to be better. But my question is that the people that did get the shot, they were the last ones that did it. I think you said in the thing that there was one person that got the shot, did get it again. Correct?
Well, somebody who was vaccinated contracted the virus, yes. And, you know, I was recently informed of a family member who's vaccinated and boosted, had COVID 2.5 months ago, and has COVID again.
Was it the severity of it?
Well, I think we were lucky with the severity of it. I think these were, you know, pretty much classic flu-like symptoms, and that people were able to get over rather quickly, and I'm thankful for that. But the severity, thankfully, was not bad. People were to work back to work generally within 5 or 6 days, and I think that's something we should all be grateful for.
Yeah, and now the best thing about it is everybody's building up an immunity to it. So we're going to have another run around with something else, but we're in place now for the next one, hopefully.
Well, what I can tell you is that my continuity of operations plan is easily adaptable to whatever else might come our way. I know we're all hopeful that life's going to get a little bit more back to normal after this, and this becomes more endemic than pandemic. But I'm confident that at least what we require employees to do and what our plan says is the best course of action. We just have to be sure that people continue to be diligent. And, you know, I think there's a fair amount of just COVID fatigue.
Yes.
And I think that probably, you know, I don't know for sure, it could have had something to do with it. Somehow, some way, we let our guard down. And, you know, I think people have learned from that. And with the, I mean, you hate to get natural immunity by contracting the virus, but if nothing else, I think we are stronger, and if there is such a thing, more impervious to this happening again because of what we've experienced already.
So this is a plan we've got, and we can implement it at any time. We don't have to go through board approval or anything. It's something that just change the date or the names, something we can implement immediately.
Yeah, my plan's designed to be progressive, and, you know, in terms of, you know, how serious the positivity rates or how high they are in our county or in our local area. And I think the plan, our processes and procedures are sound. We just all have to be very hyper diligent to be sure that we're following the guidelines at all times, even when you're out in the field working with other people. And I think that's probably the most important lesson to learn from this.
Thanks, John. Thanks for putting the plan in place, and now we have something forward. It's going to happen again. It's inevitable. But now I think everybody's more on guard and lesson learned. Hey, learn something.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment real quick, you know, kind of in that same vein. You know, with four people testing positive, there's certainly a pretty strong association with it being a workplace outbreak. And so I feel pretty confident that we're coming down the back end of this thing, but that's certainly not a certainty. And we could have another variant that's even worse. And so I would just throw some caution out there to make sure that our continuity plan is robust enough to survive a variant that's significantly worse than Omicron. I mean, in some ways, we got lucky with minimal isolation and quarantining times and that kind of stuff. But if this comes back with a version that, or a variant that is much stronger, you know, that same continuity plan might be put under additional stress. And so I think it's really crucial that we understand where our weaknesses were here and where the breakdown was. And I think you're right. I think COVID fatigue is affecting all of us. And that's where this opportunistic virus gets you. You know, and so I think it's really crucial that we use this as a learning process to make sure that when this comes around again, you know, we can't let our guard down.
I agree.
Here, here.
Please continue, John.
Well, if there's no additional questions, the only other thing two other things I wanted to reiterate. One, we have put a budget calendar in the board packet. Please, everybody, kind of tune in to that. We've got the budget process coming up. We've got, you know, a schedule to abide by in our efforts to create our next fiscal year budget. And everybody's got a role to play in that. And I would just say, please just kind of review and tune in to that budget calendar because things are starting to ramp up, and I want everybody to kind of be apprised as to our time frame and our milestones that we need to complete in order to get this process done. And so wanted to just mention that. It's in the board packet. Please review that. The other thing I wanted to mention was our unaccounted for water. I'm quite stymied by some of the numbers we're getting. I will say that we're not just sitting and hoping for the best. We're proactively doing something about it. For one thing, we are going to embark on a proactive acoustic leak detection program, which we have never had at the authority. The necessary equipment to do this is supposed to arrive this week. Our goal is to break up our system into segments and to do at a minimum one segment a year. In an attempt to try to find a potential water leaks that we are unaware of, but that we can detect with acoustic equipment to locate those. With these numbers, it's not just the numbers, it's the variability of the numbers month to month that is so frustrating and so hard to put a finger on. One of the things that we are doing is we are beginning to pay a particular attention to those water lines that might be in remote areas where a significant leak could occur and we would not necessarily know it. I will say that we did find a significant leak. I can't say that it accounts for these kind of water losses, and it certainly doesn't account for the variability of these numbers month to month. But I can tell you we had to hack our way in there, so we found a water leak in a remote location that was a substantial leak that had been going on for an undetermined amount of time. And that water leak has now been repaired. One of the improvements that we are making to our program is we're going to walk these remote water lines routinely to be sure that we are contributing to water loss numbers in a way that is very hard to detect. But we're This is fast becoming my number one priority, and it's because it absolutely has to. And you know, I can tell you that you know, we did find that one leak. There's no way it accounts for this much, but I can tell you it was a substantial leak and been gone for a while. We're going to be implementing some procedural improvements to our monitoring system for this type of stuff. And, you know, part of it's going to be making sure we lay eyes on these remote water lines and walk them once in a while so that if there is a leak, it's not just pouring down some hillside into a ravine and dumping into a slough, right? We need to keep tabs of these. But I believe by this time next year, and starting even sooner, we will have a robust, proactive, and ongoing leak detection program that doesn't rely on us being able to see water cooling up on the side of the roof. We've got to do better than that. And we're embarking on that program just as soon as the equipment arrives, and I believe the equipment will arrive by the end of the week.
Now, was that because of tree roots or anything like that, or was the shift of the ground or the shift of the fan, or just in these remote areas?
Yeah, you know, and luckily we don't have a lot of these, but we do have some areas. This one was found up behind Hill Drive, and it's, you know, these are, I can't blame them on the shift to ground or anything like that. All I can blame them on was, you know, the fact that we need to do a better job of both with the acoustic sound leaked equipment we're getting, but also, you know, we need to be conscious about these water lines that are off the beaten path. And we need to be sure that we're inspecting those one way or the other routinely. And that's what we will be doing going forward. This is not the smoking gun, I can tell you that. But everything contributes. And this was a significant leak. And I'm looking forward to what our water loss numbers show after this. But this is one area where we have to improve. And this is one area where I am going to make it a priority to develop a comprehensive, proactive, ongoing program to look for these leaks. And to, you know, anytime we detect one, we're going to go in and we're going to get repaired. And, you know, we'll break up the our service area into segments, with the intent that we can do the entire service area within 3 to 4 years by rotating these segments. I'd like to do it more frequently than that, but we've got a lot of demands on our time, and that's, you know, 1,000% improvement. And it's just been a lack of having the necessary equipment, and that's not going to be a problem anymore, and it really wasn't that expensive.
Is this maybe a possibility of the fire department using some of the water? Do they let you know when they crack hydrants? Or, I mean, this is a amount of water that, you know, you think it's going to come from a good-sized line, or?
Yeah, I think we can roll that out. I mean, we're as part of this process, we're leaving no stone unturned. We're looking for trying to account for water that might be used by fire departments, water that might be used by contractors. We've got a system in place to meter that if people are doing things correctly. There's always the possibility of some kind of unlawful water use within our system, but it's a small town. I think we'd know that. And our, you know, any of the fire departments, the emergency responders, whether it's our system or not, they know that, you know, to let us know about this stuff. But
I can't attribute it to that. I can't attribute it to anything other than actual water loss or meter inaccuracies or, you know, water leaks. But we're going to find out. And I'm going to report to you guys on a monthly basis about this because I do not believe we're losing this much water, but I think it's a combination of things all happening at the same time, and we have to just start eliminating these things. Nobody will ever convince me we're leaking this much water, but something's going on, and it's obviously a complicated issue because everything we've looked at up to this point isn't answering the question, but without a proactive acoustic leak detection program, we certainly can't say we're doing everything in our power to discover the cause or to find a solution. And we'll have to see what we come up with.
John?
Yeah.
When were you planning? I know you're busy, but when were you planning on replacing the dune wells and the spit wells metering?
Well, I'm still looking at that very closely. We've done some analysis, and it seems like our numbers are highest when we're on the wells. However, I will say this, that this last month's the highest number we've ever had. And we were on the wells. I don't think we were on the wells at all. If we were, it was one day. 0 days, Rochelle Shone. So how do I blame that on the well meters? Right?
And yeah.
This is the highest month we've ever had. Something's going on. It's clear something is going on, and the only commitment I can make to the board and to the community is we're going to find out what it is.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. Go ahead, John.
I would just, say, and I want to reiterate, I agree with your concern on this. And what was kind of going through my mind when I was reading this is, as we're heading into this water master plan, some of the numbers that you're talking about are greater than the growth factors that we're potentially anticipating in these plans. And so, especially when we're talking about getting a new skid at Horn Creek to justify water use and things like that. I mean, these numbers now of water leaks are significant compared to some of these other things that could be in that master plan. So I share your concern, and I agree that this needs to be a priority, so thank you for doing that.
Absolutely.
Cameron, did you have another question?
Yeah, I did. It was interesting because last year, at the end, it's like it peaked up. What was that, November? It really peaked up again, and then it's like a couple months, and now here we are again. Where with the new metering system and stuff, you're able to find more leaks, residential or business, but man, this is like a loop of where to narrow it down. Like you say, is it the spit wells? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I sure hope we don't have a main blowout that it's like it's gonna blow up the street. We have a big crater.
Yeah, well, we're doing a complete review of all our processes, including how we read the meters, including how we, perform the calculations to determine water consumption, water production. We're looking at the source of those readings, which is the meters. All I can say is, and I say this to the board and to the community, there's no way I believe that we're losing this much water. We're probably losing some, but it's got to be a combination of factors, And, Sean touched on the criticality of it, whether it's water rights or a water conservation plan or just sound management and demonstrating sound management to the community, we have got to nail this down. And honestly, I got things going on every day and I got to keep things going, but this is my new mission. We're going to figure this out because we're not losing as much water. I just don't see how it's possible. But on the other hand, whether it's inaccurate water meters or inaccurate, human error calculating these numbers, we're doing a complete review top to bottom. And not the least of which is this leak detection program that we've never really done because we've never had the equipment to do.
The line that runs underneath Horn Creek, that runs up under the river, how would you check that for a leak?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because we were talking about that scenario precisely. If for some reason we had a leak in that area, it'd be exceptionally hard to detect. But we're tuned into that as a possibility as well. We're approaching this with an open mind, and we're going to look at absolutely everything to the best of our ability.
Then you get, everybody's shooting an idea, and it's like, yeah, we thought about that. But this is going to be interesting where this one pops up.
Yeah, well, we'll solve it.
Okay.
I mean, mark my words, we'll solve it.
The saga continues.
We won't solve it overnight, but this has gotten to the point where, you've got to figure this out. And so I've got all hands on deck, and we're going to follow this through and see what we can find.
Great. Thank you, John. Are there any other questions on the manager's report?
I've got one, Don. You said we had a contractor nick our line, the maintenance repair, 20 feet of the reservoir. Now, did they nick it and pay for it to be repaired? Isn't that if a contractor, anybody hits our lines, they've got to pay for the repair?
Well, I would say to some extent, I certainly agree that's the case. We were able to repair it with a simple repair band, very quick, very easy, relatively painless and inexpensive, and that was my primary focus at the time.
Okay. But we do have a policy in place that if somebody does, they get...
Do you hear me? I believe we do, and I believe that under certain circumstances we would certainly pursue that. I don't think this was one of them. It was already exposed, and it was a very quick and easy fix.
John, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, who's speaking?
Leonard.
It's Leonard.
Leonard, yeah.
Hey, guys. That wasn't... The contractor didn't nick that. What they did, it was an open bore pit, and too much of the water main was exposed, and it cracked. We just put a repair band on it, and so I don't know that we have had a situation like that, but it wasn't a nick.
They did not damage it in the act of opening up their bore pit. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there's some boring going on north of town. And in the process of doing that, Leonard's entirely right. They exposed a little too much of our line, and it kind of cracked under its own weight. There's still a cause of the issue. But under the circumstances and how easy it was to repair, we certainly didn't see any reason to go beyond just taking care of the problem.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Leonard. Any other questions? All right, let's move on to 6 a.m. finished business, water and wastewater master plans. John?
So we commented a second time on the water master plan. Everything is most of these were just housekeeping issues, to be honest. And they're working to correct those housekeeping issues, certainly working on what I think most of us consider to be putting the finishing touches on the water master plan. Perhaps the one thing that was the largest issue and is taking parametrics the most time, I don't know if you guys recall, but we switched up the order of priority for our projects that we were projecting to be needed, which on the surface seems like a relatively low impactful thing. But as part of the Water Master Plan, we also did an SDC study, which is a significant part of the plan, and this was done by a third-party consultant that was a sub to Parametrics, and their SDC plan was based on our original priority list of projects. We have changed that, therefore, in order for the plan to have full value, that SDC study has got to reflect our change in our project priority list, and that requires working through that third-party consultant and having them having them rework our list and to pull in that analysis based off of our latest list of priorities, not the way we had originally prioritized them when we first approached Parametrics about doing this plan for us. So that's really the only holdup at this point, is the fact where it's a third-party consultant that's got to update their analysis. The Water Master Plan is essentially done. I haven't gotten any pushback about our second set from our second review, our comments from our second review. And I believe that, again, we are very close to sending this potentially off to the state for approval, which is our next step. We cannot really adopt the plan until the state also approves it. And at that point in time, the Water Master Plan is done. But I want everybody to know it's essentially done now. We're just waiting for that third-party contractor to make that adjustment. And then we will receive what what Parametrics believes, and hopefully what we all believe is our final version of our Water Master Plan. The Wastewater Master Plan is, again, on its heels. I've directed Parametrics to invest most of their energy in finalizing our water plan and then to finish up our wastewater. Our wastewater is not far behind. I promise you that. We're going to see a draft of that very soon. But one of the competing priorities, which is the next item on the list, if Carolyn, if you don't mind me, go ahead and tying that
please
in.
Please go ahead.
Is our water conservation plan, which has a deadline of less than a month. So, based off of the fact that this plan is due to the state on April 1st, I'm not too surprised that it's sucked a lot of oxygen out of the room. And so I think considering that deadline for a water conservation plan is so close on the horizon, it makes sense, even if it delays a couple of the other things further,
it makes sense for them to be sure that we've got a good plan put together by our deadline. And I know they are working on that. We've been working on it with them, providing them with data and information. But I think probably the next thing we're going to see complete just by sheer necessity is going to be our water conservation plan, which is due in only a few weeks. So I think we'll see the water master plan before then. I don't think we'll see the wastewater plan until after that. But it's really important that we meet this deadline for our water conservation plan.
John, I have a question.
Please go ahead, Tom.
John, moving back to the master plan, just this query may very well be, you know, some housekeeping like you mentioned in there. But I was, as reading it, a little unclear, and we haven't talked about this, a little unclear about the main line coming from Horn Creek into our system. I believe it was noted in the overall first part of the plan, like an overview part, and it said something like 212 inches. That's like 18 foot. Is that a typo, or what is it? 212-inch lines, or what?
Yeah, that's one of the obvious housekeeping issues that has to be done.
What is the line there?
It's a 12-inch.
Oh.
Yes, it's a 12-inch line. It's not a 212-inch line.
Okay, I had a feeling that was the case, but I just hadn't asked before.
That's one of the housekeeping issues.
Thanks.
John, you need to sit back. You're repeating yourself in the line.
I'm hearing some feedback.
Yeah, you're too close to your mic. There you go.
I'll sit back a little bit. Sorry.
Hey, there you go.
Okay.
Any other questions on unfinished business? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. Item 7A, water sewer availability approvals. John?
Thank you. And I might get the name of the company wrong. I always refer to them as the Nesteca Ridge Group. Everybody familiar who I'm talking about in regard to that? They have asked for water and sewer availability for two developments that they are currently working on. One is a fourplex on South Rock Road near the Slough Bridge. If you guys all know where I'm referring to with that. The other one is for an expansion of their offices here on Cape Kiwanda Drive, right to the south of us. And Dave Hankin is the construction manager for this developer, and Dave has been good enough to join us on this call in case there are any questions. But Dave has submitted some preliminary drawings for the concept drawings for the two developments. He's provided a summary of information regarding these developments and what he's hoping to achieve in the way of water and sewer services. In accordance with Resolution 08-01, the first step in this process for new developments is for a water and sewer availability request, which if we grant water and sewer availability would be followed up by a letter. I want to say that this is only for water and sewer availability. This is not an endorsement of the plans or the plans in place. That will be the next phase of the process. Dave and I still have some things to nail down regarding the what and where in terms of water and sewer services regarding these developments. But that will be phase two of this process. Phase one is for the developer to ask for a water and sewer availability in regard or in accordance with the resolution. That is only a decision the board can make. And I just want to say that that water and sewer availability letter that would stem from this makes a disclaimer that we're not approving plans at this point. We're not approving concepts at this point. What we're doing at this point is only approving and acknowledging that these projects, we have sewer and water service available that is capable to support these projects. I can tell you the answer to that question is yes, we do. And to further progress this development and having it be part of our service area, we have to approve this water and sewer availability. And I know Dave is coming to the board, and I'm coming to the board tonight to seek a motion that grants that water and sewer availability. What will happen after that, we'll send Dave and his group a water and sewer availability approval letter. What will commence after that is Dave and I getting together and making, determining what size of water services we need and where those water services are going to be relocated. At that point in time, it will be incumbent on Dave and his group to provide us with a corrected set of plans. And at that point in time, we will review the plans and make a separate determination on whether we approve the plan. But for now, we're just coming to the board seeking approval for that availability letter. And that's what I would ask the board to approve tonight. But if you have any questions, one of the reasons Dave is here is so that he can help to answer any questions the board might have.
John, Ann will go first, then Cameron, and then Tom. So, John, if I understand you correctly, the materials that have been submitted do satisfy fully the resolution 1801, item 1, requests for water and or sewer availability. So the material that's been submitted checks all those boxes to your satisfaction as far as information that we have in hand.
They do to my satisfaction, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Cameron?
My question is the property here by the Slough Bridge, that is a residential, and now it's going to go to a business?
No.
I mean, it's apartment buildings or a duplex?
It's a fourplex.
What's that?
A fourplex.
So,
apartments.
Is that no different than a business that they're running as? Or would it have a commercial rate? But like, no different than the apartment or the hotels? Or do we have a different...
Cameron, we have a rate in our list of rates that we approve every year as part of the budget that addresses the fourplexes. And the county is responsible for the zoning issues.
Right. That would be zoning change. So there's already water, sewer to both those things that they're asking for.
There is not water, sewer for a fourplex.
And that's property?
Correct.
There was a double or a single wide trailer that was there, and then they had put in a trailer dump site there. Isn't that correct?
Well, this is one thing that we're still working through, but our understanding is there are two existing water lines, or two existing water services in the area. One of them, I believe, was for the trailer. We're asking for a separate water service for each of the fourplexes. And the there's some question about a second water service in that area, but my understanding it's on an abandoned line that doesn't have any water flowing through it anymore.
Didn't we fix that water line that came from the Slough Bridge down to Stevens?
Well, I don't know. My understanding is we've got a 2-inch water line on one side of the road and a 6-inch AC line on the other side.
Rochelle, did you want to elaborate a bit?
I was just going to add that a couple years ago we did replace all of those services along there with the 2-inch line that is on the other side, getting rid of that 6-inch line. So, and then retapped every service that was already there. And that is why there's two there.
So we have to reset up the lines on the east side of the road then? To bigger lines?
That hasn't been determined. We aren't at that phase. We're only looking at water sewer availability tonight. Tom, did you have a question?
Yes. John, in your mind, there are no issues as far as capacity for either the water or sewer. We don't have any, no capacity issues at all.
No, there are some places in town where I might want to take a harder look at that. But in these locations, we have no limitations for developments like these.
Okay.
We've got lines that ran right by there, those properties.
Sean?
I've got a question for John and a question for Dave. I guess to John, my question really just kind of revolves around procedure. What, given that this is an outright use situation, given the zoning, what would necessitate the board having to grant permission for this versus, say, somebody who just wanted to build a house and wanted water service that wouldn't need board approval or a board letter of availability?
Well, I believe that both of these situations fall under the stipulations identified in Resolution 0801, in that these aren't single-family dwellings. One of them is a multiple-family dwelling, which triggers the provisions in this resolution, and the other one is the expansion of a business, which qualifies as well.
Okay, thanks. And then my question to Dave. Dave, thanks for being on the call. This is just an outright use, right? You're not looking for any conditional uses or variances or anything like that?
Nope.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. Ann? I'm prepared to make a motion.
Please.
That we issue letters of availability to, I believe it's Nestucca Ridge Development, to proceed with the Canal House project and the Nestucca Ridge Development Office project. And I'm assuming those would be two separate letters, one for each project.
That's correct.
I'll second that motion.
It has been moved and seconded that the board offer the water sewer availability letter to Nestucca Ridge family of companies for the expansion of the Nestucca Ridge Company office on Cape Drive and for the fourplex canal house. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Motion approved unanimously. Thank you, Dave, for being here, and thank you, John, for presenting.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Item 7B, the authority manager review process. That's a board item. That issue has arisen because we believe that we'd like more information
from staff in the review process, and it has been suggested that we take a look at some options. Tom, do you want to discuss this a little bit?
Yes, Sean and I have been working on this, and we've had a discussion. Looking at the form that we're using currently now, we have five major questions or area of concern that the board looks at in judging the authority manager in this review process. And of those five areas, I just went over it again a couple of times today, and it mentions four of those five questions have sections in them where we as board members can't witness the areas in the questions that are asked for, so we can't, as board members, make a good judgment to that. And it revolves around our staff and how he interacts with staff and team members. So between Sean and I, we came up with an idea where staff, we would rewrite these questions, eliminating that section, and have feedback strictly from staff to present to the board. However, with our unique organizational structure, where the board can't directly contact staff or that sort of thing, John came up with an idea. I'll let him go over it, that we have an intermediary. Sean?
Well, I just to kind of back up a little bit. I want to make sure I'm not saying that we. I think the review process is fine that we have. I don't want to change that. But I would like to revisit the idea that Ryan Fleming brought up, which was this filter up approach to employee feedback. He sent us a memo, just kind of outlining how we could go about a process where we could get feedback from staff, and it would essentially be a what he called a filter-up approach, where John would have interactions with our staff as part of the review process, and it would be broader than just the context of an authority manager review, but that would be a way to get some feedback from staff to John, and then John could report that feedback back to the board, and it would be a way of interacting with our staff that would be, you know, consistent with best practices in HR, and also give us the opportunity to have some feedback from our employees. You know, one of the things that we've butt up against with this is, you know, like Tom said, we don't have the ability really to get an evaluation of how John interacts with the staff, because we don't see that. But yet at the same time, we've got to respect the fact that, you know, John needs to be the guy that's in charge of all his employees, and we don't want to be going around John. So this was something that Ryan Fleming came up with when we were coming up with the new format for the authority manager review, that would be this filter-up approach, which would kind of be a hybrid in between the two. It's not, you know, perfect, but it's consistent with best practices. And so I would just like us to revisit that and go back to incorporating that. As we know, you know, that was one of the weaknesses of our authority manager review process, was not having this kind of feedback from employees. And so I think, you know, Ryan Fleming's proposal in that memo, I think, was a pretty good one, and I would just like to see it continue to pursue that and incorporate it into the process.
Continuing that same line of thought, Sean and I also discussed the possibility of maintaining anonymity from where these feedback data comes from, was possibly using our HR consultant to receive that data and then pass it on to us. Now, Ryan's proposal of getting that data to John, no offense to John, but, you know, it could be misconstrued. And the tricky part here is not to undermine John's authority, but we do need that data back, and possibly using the lady that was with our state survey that we conducted as an example. Just have a couple of our non-exempt employees, or one non-exempt employee who was, say, elected among themselves, and possibly our two lead employees, answer those questions that we come up with in reference interaction with staff, and to maintain anonymity. So it possibly really pin down some of these basic ideas. It might be a good idea to have a one-time workshop to figure out the language to it. And and to kind of figure out if we need to have a resolution, call this a policy or whatever, because I don't, the way things are, I don't think it's fair to John. And one thing that we've, several of the board were more interested in was a line of communication, and this would definitely open up a line of communication, provide more continuity in the entire organization. So my suggestion is to have a workshop where we can, you know, pencil this all out and get advice.
And I'm really, I appreciate both of your comments and the time that you've put into talking with each other and now bringing to the board meeting. I couldn't agree more that the concepts of anonymity and confidentiality are critically important in this process. We had, I believe, talked before briefly, Tom, about that idea you were just bringing forward, was to use the HR consultant that we've used most recently to work with the board and see what her take is on the situation, first of all, and entertain some ideas that we've had, such as a survey or workplace satisfaction device of some sort or something along those lines. And I personally don't want to try to get ahead of that conversation because she's the expert in the HR stuff, and I want to let her be that expert and give us her advice. But I think we're kind of all headed in the same direction in terms of collecting information, respecting privacy and confidentiality. And I think if we did go the step of having an HR person conduct whatever device it is we wind up with, that we'd be far ahead toward that purpose. And so I think it would be possibly good if we contacted her, sent her the form that we are using now, and talked with her about this discussion. Maybe she could listen to the board meeting online and see what our thoughts are, and then we could meet with her possibly in a workshop setting. It might take more time than just an agenda item on a regular business meeting, so that might be a good thing. But I think the first step would be to contact her and get the ball rolling. And I think this is such a useful conversation and so important, because ultimately the purpose of reviews, performance reviews of any staff, is to serve the best interest of the authority and the staff member. And so I think this is a productive and good conversation. I'm glad we're having it.
Well, one thing that thing I think that we could probably all agree on are the questions in the current review need to be changed. And this process is the proper way to do it, I think.
I like, again, the time and energy and how you presented this sounds terrific. I think I'm on track with all of you that if we were to provide our consultant with the current review form that we used with our current concerns about how it's not quite yet working for us, with the information that Sean shared about the filter-up approach, and gave those to our HR consultant and asked her, let her know that what we would be interested in is a way to get information from our staff for the board to use as part of the review process and move forward from there, and then she could set up a time to work with us, maybe for an hour workshop, to talk about how she sees this, make sure she's clearly got our concerns heard, and that she might be able to present something to us, and then how she would recommend that process works. I think then that would get our questions answered, and we might be able to move forward without putting an extra project on John's desk, because I think that right now there's a lot of things going on there. And if we were to use this HR consultant, we might actually be able to complete our process before we were ready to do his yearly review. Obviously, we're always going to be improving our review processes and our getting our information from staff because we want this to be a quality organization and do the best we can for our community. Does that seem like we have consensus on that, to move in the direction of contacting the consultant and asking her to go forward? Cameron, I see a question.
Yeah, I do. I remember we had it was a long discussion when we first started setting this up about talking to the employees. Is there any way that we can, as a group or as a board, talk to employees as a sit-down, or do we have to go through the HR consultant?
I don't think we can, Cameron. It's just the way special districts are set up, and I don't particularly agree with it. I like full communication from top down and bottom up. But because we are a specific type of organization legally, the way I read the Oregon Revised Statutes and the administrative rules, we're kind of hamstrung doing that. So. This is looking for a way to still maintain those lines of communication, and it's a creative way, and it seems difficult, but it's the only practical way probably to do it.
Right, and have we had any of the employees contact our HR consultant?
I haven't a clue.
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, I mean, we must be doing something good. I mean,
that's a good sign.
But I do agree. I think it would be nice to get. I'd like to have some input from the employees, you know, because they're on a everyday basis with John, and we're only, you know, here and there in meetings and things like that. So yeah, we need to do something. This is kind of only getting maybe a quarter of the stuff that we need. So, I mean, as a board, we can all make our judgment about John, but the employees are the ones that have to work with him. They got to put up with the Seahawks hat, too.
Sean, did you
I would just add that, I'll send this out to you all just because it may be something that's been a while since we've looked at it. I'll send this Ryan Fleming memo out to everybody so that everybody has it handy, but I would just say let's make sure to include that with what we've sent to the HR consultant, and I can certainly understand that, you know, one HR consultant's ideas might be different from another HR's consultant ideas, and I can be sensitive to that, but, you know, given that Ryan helped us create the existing authority manager review process that we have, I think including this as part of why we want to have some aspect of employee feedback, I think would be beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we didn't have anything before Ryan, and we were running into trouble there, so yeah. I look forward to your stuff, John.
All right, then between this meeting and next meeting, we'll move ahead and see if we can get our HR consultant to review and come up with some ideas and meet with the board and put a workshop on the agenda. All right, item 7C, SDAO Best Practices Insurance Program. John?
Thank you, and I would ask Rochelle to chime in if I don't remember all the details about it, but SDAO offers a best practices program to where if you can check all the boxes and demonstrate best practices that you get up to a 10% discount on your insurance, and I'm talking about a wide variety of insurances. It's not just, you know, general liability, it's auto insurance, I think most of the insurances that that we have to pay. This year, they've got a list of five things. Each thing offers a 2% discount if you can demonstrate a completion or compliance. Currently, we've got 6 out of 10, 6% out of a possible 10% that we are eligible for. The remaining 4% requires some commitment by board members. And one of the requirements requires a commitment by all board members. And the other 2% we get, I believe, if we can just get one or two board members to sign on. And if you could, Rochelle, if you could help to identify exactly what those commitments are and just check my numbers on that.
Okay, so the first one that is going to require all board members can be something as simple as watching a board training video, which I know we had one not too long ago that only a couple members actually were able to watch, but if everybody could watch one video, we could just check that one off. It would be super duper easy. Or you can attend one of their in-person ones. The second one is to become a member of the board, SDAO Board Academy, and their academy program. I went through just the employee one, and this would just be you guys making a commitment to it. That would get us the 2%. You don't have to complete it yet because it took me 3 years and 300 hours of training. So good luck. But if two people can commit, we can get 2%, and 10% of our insurance is going to be over $6,000 that you're giving back to the authority. So.
The first one I don't have any problem with you know, taking a short online class. There's no way that 300 hours is going to be worth saving $1,000 on our insurance. I cannot commit to 300 hours worth of training over the next couple of years. It's just, that's a deal breaker for me.
Rochelle, is that really what we're talking about? Is a commitment that large for the extra 2%, or is it some kind of condensed?
Let me look at it really, really, really quick. It looks like to receive the credit in this category, two members need to enroll.
Your mic's mute. Your mic's
Dang
mute.
I thought I was doing so well. All right. It says, to receive this credit, two members have to enroll into the Board Leadership Academy. It does not say you have to complete it. Not that you shouldn't commit to the whole thing and make yourselves feel better, but you don't have to complete it to get the 2%.
Well, I see from looking at it that there are there's different tracks available, and they're modular components. So what we might do is let's look at that number 5, which is board member education program that requires the academy, and do some analysis with that. John and Rochelle and I'll take a look at that and present that to you the next meeting.
Can I add one more thing, Carolyn?
Yes.
We don't have to make this commitment until November 4th, so you have lots of time to think about it.
Well, we have to be done by it by November 4th.
You just have to be enrolled by November 4th and do your training video by then.
Okay.
You can do it.
Let's find out what the Leadership Academy actually contains and how many hours of commitment and so forth, so that the board, so that maybe we can come up with two board members that are interested in. Can find that time to do that. Going back to number 4, is there any reason that any of us could not complete a class online prior to November 4th? And I would hope that it would be through by the 1st of October so that we can get all of our ducks in and done. I don't think that those classes run more than an hour. And get that information to the office so that we can check that one off the list. And Rochelle, if I remember correctly, we have to contact you to get a password to get in to it.
I believe John actually has that permission, but I will look into it again. I think usually we just have to send you guys an email and you can do it that way.
Okay. So would you think for the class, would you figure that out and get that information to us? Because I'm afraid that if we don't get started in March or April, that summer's going to come and it's going to be a really busy summer, and then we're going to be in October and not have done it. So I'm hoping that the next month or two, all of our board members could take care of number 4. And then we'll do more homework on number 5 and figure out if that's at all possible for any of us to do in a reasonable amount of time. Does that make sense? Anne?
Just a quick question as to whether the advanced board training that some of us were able to do 2 or 3 months ago or whenever it was, if that qualifies for number 4. And I don't know, I can't see that from this document that's in the minutes and stuff, but I would like to try to figure that out. And it could be that it was done in last year or something like that too. So I'm not sure how to go about figuring that out.
If I remember correctly, this discount is a yearly, or is it every 2 years that we pay? It's every year that we pay this, and every year that the discount can occur. So any education will have to be in 2022 and be done by November 4th to count for 2023.
So it's calendar year. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on this item? Item 8, yes, questions and comments. Cameron?
Yeah, I've got one on the committee. Leave your name and number. Day and time of day. Hi. My question, do we need to go out and get other people for our budget committee? Or have they already been contacted that they will step up and do another great job, as always?
Kevin, the budget committee, each individual member serves 3 years, I believe.
Okay.
And I don't think we have any vacancies at this point.
Okay.
And I believe they will or have been contacted with regards to the schedule, the calendar. And John's nodding his yes. Yes.
Can't see.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? That was guest questions and comments. I'm sorry, we jumped back and forth. Were there any guest questions or comments that came into the office this month? Okay, thank you. Director comments. Cameron had one already. You have another one?
I would like to see on the agenda that we next month possibly meet in the office. Get the cobwebs out of that conference room.
Karen, John and I talked about this yesterday. I'm not sure that the office is, or the conference room at the building is going to be acceptable for a public meeting, given the square footage that's there and the air circulation. So yes, it will be on the agenda next month to talk about what our options are and where we go. We have a board of five, and four of those five are at risk, unless Sean's got something that I don't know about, because the other four, because of age or illness, are at risk with COVID. And since we still have COVID circulating in the community, I think we're going to be very interested in finding some place that is safe for all folks. When the mask requirement is lifted, I don't know that we want to be in a position of requiring masks, and yet we will have a responsibility to make sure that folks are safe. And so we'll need to determine what our criteria is for going in and out of public meetings at this point, now that we're headed for endemic as opposed to pandemic.
Is our building adequate for our office space? Or we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to build another building for our conference room to...
I didn't mean to imply that. The building is safe for employees, but since we can't predict how many of the public will be in attendance, we do have an issue with that tiny conference room, so we may need to be looking at the community center as an option.
Well, I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Hearing no comments, it is 6:27, and I will adjourn our meeting. Thank you very much for your time and energy, and we'll see you all next month, if not sooner.